He had then called an instructor at Strathmore, who quickly rounded up the four students. They spent the spring of 2011 at the Chai offices, receiving internship pay of about $150 a month. They sat for days with the staff in the health ministry to understand their traditional way of gathering information. Then they pounded out the app and polished up the database software to allow disease reporting from any mobile web interface. By last summer, their integrated disease surveillance and response system was up and running at the ministry, obviating much of Bharti Airtel's proposed costs. The process was rough, but not too bad, Njenga says. There were some nights we worked until 2 a.m. He and his colleagues are now finishing an SMS version so that health workers without web access can make reports via text message from mobile phones of any make or model. The students are also working on another key problem, coming up with ways for the health ministry to track pharmaceuticals it ships to the government's hospitals and clinics to avoid shortages or waste. Mobile phones are lifelines for Kenyans. Some 26 million of the nation's 41 million people have phones, and 18 million use them to do their everyday banking and conduct other business. Most use a service called M-Pesa, which is offered by the country's dominant wireless provider, Safaricom. If mobile phones could play as big a role in Kenyan healthcare as they do in Kenyan financial transactions, the effects could be profound. A growing body of research worldwide is showing that beyond disease surveillance, mobile phones can improve public health by connecting people with doctors for the first time, reminding people to take medications or bring children in for vaccinations, and even enabling doctors in remote areas to view, update, and manage crucial clinical records. Still, there are big gaps between the promise of mobile health technologies, or mHealth, and their actual implementation. According to the mHealth Alliance, a Washington-based group, 45 mobile health projects are active or have already been completed in Kenya alone, more than any other country. Most have been devised and paid for by philanthropies, aid agencies, and NGOs. The projects vary widely. One delivers money via M-Pesa to pay for repair of fistulas, a damaging complication of childbirth. Another verifies the authenticity of drugs when workers text their serial numbers. Some have had substantial impact, but most are limited in scope and time frame. And there's often no business model for sustaining them when the funding runs out, leaving the field suffering from a bad case of pilotitis, says Patricia Michel, executive director of the mHealth Alliance. The space is incredibly fragmented, unfortunately, she says. You have a lot of bits and pieces coming from different angles and lots of pilots going on. Meanwhile, IT contracts for government websites, electronic registries, and other large projects are typically conceived by NGOs or donors and carried out by contractors who may be remote from the specific needs of workers at the front lines. You have people thinking at 30,000 feet, let's do websites for every government ministry, Jackson Hungu, Chai's country director, told me over dinner in Nairobi. That's good, he says, but it may not meet the needs on the ground. Have we gone to that pharmacist and asked, look, what do you do? You are the one who meets the patient and feels the pain. Have we understood it thoroughly from that guy's point of view? Or are we building something so donors can say, oh, we are online? Successful national technology strategies, he argues, require people like the Strathmore students, who have the code-writing chops, can readily work with the people who need to use the technology and are likely to remain in Kenya to sustain the effort. The mHealth Gap. Nairobi's Prestige Plaza shopping center would look familiar to anyone from a rich country. It's got an anchor megastore called Nakumat and a food court, the Swahili Plate Concession, which dishes up beef stews and curries is a clue you're not in Kansas. But one block away, a rutted dirt road perpendicular to the complex leads to the maw of one of Africa's largest urban slums, Kibera, with 170,000 residents. The outskirts bustle with stalls selling kale, peanuts, sugarcane, herbs, and cell phone SIM cards. The ground is hard-packed mud, littered with stones and garbage. Single-story huts flank alleyways. Rusty corrugated metal roofs shed the rains. At the nicer huts, curtains blow through openings, but the smells of smoke and feces linger, and children play near fetid rivulets lined with plastic refuse. The river at the lowest end of the slum becomes like a sewer when it rains. Kibera is, unsurprisingly, a hotbed of